Welcome to Local Matters on Newstalk 94.1. I am your host, Hannah Davis from Cookeville Regional Medical Center. And today I have Dr. Scott Rising, cardiologist at Tennessee Heart, with me. And we are going to be discussing preventative heart care. Welcome, Dr. Rising.
Thank you, Hannah. Good to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. We're glad to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been practicing in cardiology.
So I've been in Cookeville for coming on 9 years now. There's
wow.
A group of us that we've consistently added to over the years. Some have retired and left, and others have come. And it's just we're really fortunate to be here. We've got a blessed group of people, and we work well together. We've always been striving to move things forward and to expand the services that we offer to the community. And that's really the focus for us, is the community and how we can move things forward to provide better care for them.
Absolutely. So, why cardiology? Why did you decide to go into cardiology? The heart, just interesting to you, or?
So that's a question that all of us in healthcare get a lot. And the thing that's unique, I think, in my spot is, sure, I love cardiology, but honestly, if I'm truthful, there wasn't anything that I didn't like in healthcare.
Yeah.
I've been very fortunate to work in a family insurance business with my dad, which is all I ever wanted to do growing up.
Hmm.
And then after doing that for about 5 years, to work as an airline pilot for almost 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And so that gave me different insight into, you know, this industry as well, coming at it from a different perspective.
Absolutely.
Healthcare, where people were denied access to the system or singled out and had their rates increased. And then in aviation, from a safety perspective, 99.99% safe per passenger mile. And yet in this industry, we've got, depending on what data you look at, somewhere between 50 to 90,000 people that die every year mm-hmm. from preventable mistakes and recurrent mistakes. And so that's a thing that is something that I'm focused on, that I'm interested in. And I did a degree in nutritional sciences, so that's really where my interest and curiosity mm-hmm. in cardiology kind of peaked. I first started learning about some of the studies from Dr. Dean Ornish back in at that time, early 80s, late 70s, and he was showing that just lifestyle was preventing the leading cause of death in our country dramatically. And that was an area of interest that I've continued to pursue to this day.
Well, that's why you're here, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit. So heart disease, it is the number one killer in the U.S., so it's a big deal. It's a big deal for our country, for our area. Can you tell us what leads to heart disease?
Sure. I think it's the same thing that you think of in terms of any disease, whether it's cancer or diabetes or coronary disease. There are sometimes genes that predispose us to that. For example, there's a gene called lipoprotein little a, or LP little a, we call it, that has been ignored by the American College of Cardiology and American Heart Association for over 10 years. I first learned about it from a guy named Dr. Gao at Mayo Clinic, who is the principal investigator on the cholesterol guidelines for over 30 years, and I've been screening people for it for the last 11 years, despite the recommendation of our group not to, because it triples risk. And so it made no sense to me that we didn't screen people that had a triple risk, and yet treated people like diabetics, for example, that had a twofold risk aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
I just never, it never made sense. And in the 2013 cholesterol guidelines, they ignored about 90% of the data by their own admission, because they only looked at randomized controlled trials, which are the highest levels of evidence. But there's a lot of other data out there, and particularly when you're talking about Lp(a), there's genetic studies, there's geographic studies, there's pathophysiologic studies, there's a lot of other data out there that tells the story more completely than just looking at such a narrow slice with randomized trials.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's important in terms of prevention that we look more broadly, and that's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, which is genes.
Yeah.
Genes
okay.
are important, and then environment or lifestyle.
Yeah.
There's been a paradigm shift, or a flip-flop, we'll say. It used to be said that 80% of how long we live is the genes that we're born with, and 20% is the environment, not smoking, et cetera. Well, that's all flip-flop now. Now they recognize that 80% of longevity is based on lifestyle, not smoking, eating healthy, getting some regular exercise, controlling your blood pressure and diabetes. 20% is our genes. So that's really been a big switch in just recent years.
And so those two things are kind of what what are leading people. And so people are not, they're sicker than they used to be. Can you confirm? I mean, people are just sicker than they used to be. They're not taking care. And so we're seeing more heart disease, especially I feel like in the South. Is, can you confirm or deny? I mean,
so I've lived all over the country, and it's interesting that it's actually been different things in different parts. For example, mm-hmm. I would say up north, there's more pizza, pasta, cheesy stuff. Mm-hmm. Down here, there's a study by the UAB that did a look at sweet tea, fried chicken, you know, the fried vegetables, things like that. So there's different diets that can lead to these different diseases throughout the country, you know, Southwest, same kind of thing. I think that the bottom line is that the food industry certainly is a part of the story. We've got a group of kids with more diabetes and obesity than any generation that's ever lived.
Wow.
And they're expected on average not to outlive the generations ahead of them. So that's something unprecedented. That's never happened before. And food and the things that we eat are a part of that. Our bodies are hardwired to crave fatty, sugary, salty food. So there's kind of a continuum is how I like to think of it, or a spectrum that exists, that if we can, you know, there's food that we can eat that's going to cause disease, and there's food that we can eat that's going to prevent and reverse disease.
Yeah.
And I think that's a message that we don't say loudly and clearly enough to people, that it's a lot more important than most people realize. And so if we get down into the nitty gritty of that, you know, there's a, I think a middle of the road diet, in my opinion, would be the Mediterranean diet that yeah. reduces cardiac events by 25 to 30%.
Yeah.
But if you look at the two extremes, the polar opposites on diet would be the typical American diet or a typical Western diet. For example, breast cancer would be maybe 1 in 8 women with that type of diet, and coronary disease, leading cause of death. If you look at the other pole or the other extreme with a whole food plant-based diet, sure, we need randomized trials. We need better data. It's really difficult to follow somebody for 30 years and have any kind of accuracy as to, you know, what they really ate. But mm-hmm. if you look at the data that's out there, it's consistent. And that type of diet, breast cancer is maybe 1 in 55,000.
Mm-hmm.
Coronary disease is about 1 in a million. They can barely find it. So there's really big differences
yeah.
in terms of that. And the data is clear. But yet it's confusing, and I think in part a lot of that's intentional from the food industry. If you look at eggs, for example, that's fallen in out of favor more times than I can remember since my training in nutritional sciences, and it's intentional, similar to what tobacco did. So there's a lot of confusion, including among physicians. If you look at the leading cause of death among cardiologists and physicians, it's coronary disease, just like everybody
yeah.
else.
Right.
So there's a lot of confusion about that. And I think it's intentional and it's purposeful, just like they did with tobacco.
You're listening to Local Matters on News Talk 94.1. We are here with Dr. Scott Rising, cardiologist at Tennessee Heart. And today we're discussing preventative heart care. So according to the American Heart Association, an estimated 80% of cardiovascular disease, including heart disease and stroke, are preventable. And that's what we're talking about. So what can people do to prevent heart disease?
So you certainly can't change how you're born, but that's the, you know, the gene side that we were talking about a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
But if you knew you had that gene, that tripled risk, it might motivate you to make some different changes. We're all going to eat things that we shouldn't at times, and we're all going to sit on the couch and have lazy days. That's normal, and that's okay. But there's a spectrum in there that if we are more mindful of those things, it can influence the risk dramatically. There is data that shows if we start, for example, maybe 10 years earlier on the people that we see in the hospital after bypass surgery or a stent or a heart attack or stroke. After the fact, everybody's on board and very aggressive about lowering the atherogenic particles, or the particles that build plaque in the arteries. But if we had done that about 10 years earlier, the curves would flatten out to about age 100.
Mm-hmm.
So we can prolong this stuff for a lifetime, and we just need to get started earlier. And part of the problem is related to risk stratification. We don't identify very well who should be treated more aggressively.
Yeah.
1 in 200 people have really high LDL or bad cholesterol because of a gene that they're born with. Again,
mm-hmm.
a different one. About 25% of the country has this gene that I was talking about with Lp(a). So
mm-hmm.
that would be a good start to identify those people. We detect and treat less than 1% of that group right now. So
how can we prevent? How can they be tested? I mean, do they...
Blood work.
So going to a primary care doctor, going... and having regular screenings to see if this
and,
is.
And finding somebody focused on prevention because, you know, those people have had blood work countless numbers of times, and there's not been enough attention paid to them to get started earlier. The pediatric literature has been actually better than, honestly, the cardiology literature has been about treating more aggressively people at younger ages. So that would be part of it. Better risk stratification. After about age 45, we're all intermediate risk for a cardiac event.
Mm-hmm.
And about 60% of those intermediate risk patients go on to have a heart attack or stroke. So figure out who those folks are that need to be treated more aggressively and treat them more aggressively and leave the other ones alone would be a good, that would be a huge start if we could do that. Obviously, education would be a big part of that, making people more aware, you know, talking more about how effective diet and exercise or lifestyle, not smoking, and helping give people some tools and resources and continually reminding them. Education would be a huge part of that.
Do you think that people, when they hear, diet and exercise, I mean, you hear that so often in healthcare that do you think they just feel like it's bigger than they can handle, that they're just overwhelmed by it? I mean, what is some encouragement from a cardiology standpoint to these patients to not feel overwhelmed that they don't have to change everything? We don't cold turkey everything, but how can they not be overwhelmed by the fact that they need to change their lifestyle?
Yeah, great question. So the thing that is useful, I think, is in terms of how we communicate and helping people understand that it's not hopeless, because that's the sense that people get. And part of it is not recognizing the fact that it's a continuum, like I was just saying. So we now know that just with exercise, for example, there's benefit with that beginning at about a 10-minute walk. And there's about 100 different things that have been identified. You know, cancers like breast and colon and prostate cancer, some of these hormonal sensitive mm-hmm. cancers, cardiac events, blood pressure, blood sugar, diabetes, bone density, our mental well-being. You know, there's just, no joke, a list of about 100 different things. And it starts out with very little. You don't have to be out jogging. You don't have to be doing vigorous activity. If you look at the extreme benefit of exercise, say around a 90-minute walk or 40 minutes where somebody does do something more vigorous and gets their heart rate up, all-cause mortality drops about 40%, not just heart attack and stroke. But there's, again, a lot of ground between a 10-minute walk and a 40-minute jog. So there's helping people understand that, and that just a little bit can go a long way.
We'll be right back with cardiologist Dr. Scott Rising right after this.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. OfficeMart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. OfficeMart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at OfficeMart.
Welcome back. You're listening to Local Matters on News Talk 94.1. I am your host, Hannah Davis, and with me is Dr. Scott Rising, cardiologist at Tennessee Heart. And this evening, we are discussing preventative heart care. We talked about some great things, you know, that you don't have to feel like it's hopeless. You know, when it comes to thinking about diet and exercise and a lifestyle change. But those are some things that are absolutely important in preventing your, you know, preventing a heart attack or even, I mean, just your health in general. I want to talk a little bit about people who feel like they are gone too far. And we've talked about this a little bit. They feel like the damage is done. They just keep living the way that they do. I think to some extent, people feel like it just won't happen to them. That they're kind of immortal to some extent, and they just keep living this life that they do in the lifestyle, and they don't exercise, or maybe it's just too hard to exercise. So what is your encouragement to them?
So there's kind of a false sense of security is what you're getting at that we all have. There's just the status quo. And that's where the education part is so important. If we, you know, we're all just pressed for time, and it takes a lot more time to lay the groundwork for these things that we're talking about during a patient visit. But when you do that, if you take the time to do it, and you've developed the method of explaining this to people that they get it, you can make a huge difference in the probability of cardiac death, heart attack, and stroke. These are terrible things. And as somebody that deals with that in the hospital setting, I'm very motivated to take that time to do it and see people in the clinic and help them understand that, because it matters. It matters a lot. We can reduce the probability of this disease for a lifetime. Kind of back to what we were talking about with the exercise part a minute ago, I wanted to revisit that and say that even small changes in combining both diet and exercise together. So if somebody even is willing to try and they do even just a little bit,
yeah,
you're going to get to a 25 to 30% risk reduction when you combine both of those things very easily. It doesn't have to be some radical lifestyle change. And if people are motivated to make the change, and we, you know, use some objective data, for example, with the blood work to show them their risk profile, or use a risk calculator, and you make some changes that, or they make changes. Say we don't even do any medicine changes. They just make a change on diet and exercise. And to be truthful, I don't want to get into the nitty gritty with the food log. My goal is not to micromanage that. My goal is to help educate them to show what's mm-hmm. possible,
yeah.
give them the resources of what works and what doesn't, because there's a lot of diets out there. And then they make the decision about what they're motivated to do or not. And typically what I'll see is somebody will make a small incremental change on both diet and exercise.
Mm-hmm.
It may be as simple as going from Cokes every day or sodas every day to once a week and then once a month, or sitting on the couch and not doing anything to walking 10 minutes. Or, you get my point, cutting from a pack of cigarettes to a half pack. Those little changes matter, and mm-hmm. they matter a lot, especially when you start combining different groups like that. And so that's the thing. And it's just, it's all a matter of how motivated a person is. When they see the blood work and they see that, you know, the atherogenic particles have dropped by, you know, 25, 30, 50%, well, they know what they've done,
yeah.
you know, and the medicine may have only contributed 10 or 20% of that. It's the other things that they've done, you know, or they see the inflammation in the lining of the vessel go from abnormal, putting them at risk to down to normal again.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of helps seal the deal. They recognize that the things that we've talked about have actually reduced their risk for a cardiac event. And that's why I've picked a lot of the stuff that's in that blood work, because we have the outcomes data that show that those things drop when something's abnormal and we make it better.
Yeah.
So it's a multi-pronged approach to do that. Go ahead.
No, and I was going to say, and you feel better. I mean, you know, if you're making those small changes, you're feeling better. And I mean, stress is a big part of health. And, you know, I'm sure with cardiac or with, you know, heart disease, stress plays a role in it. So even exercising and getting that mental break helps, and it all plays a part in that.
And honestly, that's the kicker, that when people really get down this path a little bit more than an entry level that keeps them doing mm-hmm. it, they feel better. They're not as tired and draggy. They're not as achy. And, you know, the initial motivation is to prevent disease, but the thing that helps you go back and reinforce it is you just feel better on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. There's a so-called, Dr. Case likes to refer to people that talk the talk and walk the walk. And there's one of our senior cardiologists that we kind of go back and forth. Dr. Linhart is an avid cyclist. A lot of people in the community know him and love him. And just before I came over here, he put an article on my desk while I was seeing a patient that said, if you exercise, it lessens eating poorly. And that's true. But my comment to him was, why not eat healthy and lessen it even worse? You know, if we can get his patients to kind of check his pockets and his hands when they see him in the clinic, maybe we can have an intervention, because if he's got one hand behind his back, he might have a cupcake or a cookie in his pocket. And if you see him driving around town with his bike on his car, he's probably headed to the ice cream shop. The bike is just
a fake out. It's odd. Yeah. So some accountability for Dr. Linhart.
Yes.
I'm sure somebody can help him out with that.
We'll get his patients. We'll recruit his patients to keep him in check.
If Dr. Linhart is your cardiologist, you now have a new assignment. So I'm going to ask this in a selfish way, because, you know, I have a really hard family history. mom at 50 had open heart surgery, dad in his 40s had stents put in, and just recently had a heart event. So I've tried to take care of myself. But what if you are doing all the right things, but as you age, you still end up with heart disease? The genetic, I mean, we talked about it does play a role, but how, you know, what happens if it still happens?
So first of all, there's a 50-50 shot that you have a gene passed on to you by a parent. And even though it's in the family, it doesn't mean that you got it. So that's number one. And number two would be to screen to see if you got it, because you need to use objective data. If you just use the good cholesterol, bad cholesterol, and triglycerides, mm-hmm. like you've heard about and most people have or had it done, 60% of people still go on to have a cardiac event. That's not good enough. I'm not sure why we have, why we've let being wrong 60% of the time go on for as long as we have. There's other markers that have been validated that are more accurate. And so that would be the thing to focus on. I've got the same kind of family history, yeah. and I actually have that gene that triples risk. Mm. So it's important to know about that, because you get started earlier, or you at least have the potential to get started earlier. And then to use, I like to look at the blood work. There's some other things that we do if the blood work all looks okay, like a coronary calcium score, for example. We've got Dr. Nickerson as the imaging expert that just joined our group. And if the blood work looks okay, then I have her do a coronary calcium score to better know. And if that looks good, then those are the people in the intermediate group that you leave alone. Mm-hmm. And if either one of those is abnormal, if you've got a coronary calcium score above zero, well, by definition, there's soft plaque around that calcium, so you have coronary disease.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's a lower number, yes, your risk is low based on the coronary calcium score. But if you look at bigger groups of people, maybe that story would change. You still have coronary disease, and you should still be treated as such.
You're listening to Local Matters on News Talk 94.1. We are here with Dr. Scott Rising, cardiologist at Tennessee Heart, and this evening we are discussing preventative heart care. So exercise has been mentioned several times as a preventative tip, and I know you have a big hand in the Walk with a Doc program the past few years in the community, and it has been amazing to see the involvement grow in this program. Can you tell us about the program, exactly what it is, and why you're such an advocate for it?
It's a program that I just stumbled across about 3 or 4 years ago now. And because of what I was saying earlier about the importance of walking, starting at such a low level, that I felt it was important to try to use that as a mechanism to help people realize that, you know, even a little bit is important, and kind of lead by example. And so, but it's just, I'm thankful to all the other physicians in the community, as well as Andrea, our coordinator, to get this off, because we need a lot of other help to make it work. And the turnout has been good. People, the reception has been good. The people that show up are always very appreciative, and they don't even always have questions. It's just a nice way to start a Saturday. People show up. There's little groups that people divide into. And as the physician, we kind of just migrate between those different groups and visit with people. And usually there's some questions that people have had, and it's a nice chance for them to see us outside that block time that we have in the clinic to try to rush through and cover all the bases that we need to cover and just see us as people and visit. It's kind of and it's really nice for us to be able to do that and visit with people and have that interaction instead of our agenda that we're trying to get through. So it's good on both sides of the fence.
Yeah.
People often think that there's got to be a certain pace that you walk at, or that you have to do the whole walk, and that's not true either. You know, it doesn't matter if you're at the front of the pack or the back of the pack. There's somebody that'll walk with you, and there's no particular agenda or pace that you have to go at. If you have to break off in the middle, there's an opportunity to cut across and go back over to the cars. So it can be as much or as little as you want, but it's just a nice way to start the Saturday morning out, and we would encourage people to come out and join us.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's a great program. So as a cardiologist, are you all, or I mean, even your team of cardiologists that you guys have, are y'all pretty big advocates for people and patients being seen regularly by a primary care physician or internist, or just being seen by somebody in general?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Is there anything else you would like to say about preventative heart care?
Oh, I could talk all day about prevention.
Well, we'll have you back on, and we'll have a whole other segment on more, because I know there is so much to talk about. new studies are coming out all the time for you guys, and we hear different things. And so we'd love to have you back on to talk about this.
And I thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Absolutely. Well, from all of us here at News Talk 94.1, we thank you for listening. And thank you again, Dr. Rising, for being with me here in the studio today and discussing heart prevention. This is Local Matters on News Talk 94.1. I am your host, Hannah Davis, and we will see you here back next Thursday.